Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with the Kia 7-year warranty. Wherever the next 7 years bring you, Kia has you covered.
1850 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline. And 51551 is our text number. K, a number of calls on the same subject. You are the first one on today. K, what is the issue, please?
The issue is we're not being allowed into the graveyard in Buncody. Some days, depends on what guard you're on. Now, I have high respect for guards, don't get me wrong.
Okay.
Our local ones will let us in. I don't know where they come from then. Other days, they're actually stopping the traffic for travel reasons, but right outside of our cemetery. It was closed one day, it was locked up. It hasn't been closed since. But Easter Sunday was the first encounter I had with it. And because I've just had a new knee and I wasn't able to get to the cemetery without a lift, say, for 6 weeks. So it's the time of the year that, especially Easter Sunday, I went down with my bunch of tulips, and it's time that you plant your little truck at the end with the summer pansies. And I was to do all that, but I wasn't allowed in with the tulips anyway. And the guard was nice, and I just kind of forgot such a shock. I just drove away. There was, you know, no problem.
And Kay, are you saying, is there a guard on the gate, or there just happens to be a guard at checkpoint?
No, the guards are on the checkpoint right at the gate.
Okay, well, that's coincidental.
I don't know. They're kind of double-jobbing, I would imagine. So Easter Monday, I went down. It's always just kind of Sunday. Easter Monday, I went down. And the vanguard, she wasn't as nice as the one the day before. And I just got out of the car and I kind of went over. I had water, I had flowers, the whole lot. And she said, you can't go in there. You can't go in there. And I said, why? It's not essential. Well, I said, I'm sorry. It's kind of essential to some people. I said, I have flowers here and, you know, there's one. There's
so that, so that's the argument, Kay. A visit to a cemetery is not essential. It's not essential travel. Is that the argument?
That's the argument, yeah.
Okay. And how do you...
No, they're
you,
using discretion. Some will let you in, some won't.
Yeah, and how do you... Oh, by the way, is it a busy graveyard?
Yes, it is. There's at least five of my friends, totally two close friends, the rest associates, are being recently widowed in the last 5 years, as I have.
Okay.
And we actually go quite a lot. And there's another lady there who's recently bereaved. She's actually there 3 times a day, and she's very upset. She'd been there at 8:30 in the morning, on Easter Sunday, some other occasions at 8:20, because at the time she was used to bring the kids to school, and she's been refused entry. Another lady said it was her dad's birthday.
But how do you, how do you counter that argument that this is not an essential journey?
But I'm in my radius of, you know, it's 3-4 minutes from my home. And you know, it's not essential, but it's very important.
Oh, I understand that.
You know, they're trying to watch people's mental health and everything else. We're doing no harm. When I did get in, when there's nobody there, I'm at one grave. Last night I went down, there was another lady called Margaret, the lady that's recently buried, at her grave. I spoke to her from a distance. There was two more people in the graveyard. Mm-hmm. It's a 3.5-acre site.
And they're normally very quiet anyway, aren't they, graveyards?
Yeah, absolutely. And there's no problem with ours. There's been no antisocial behaviour, no, nothing like that. And I asked the reason, and they couldn't tell me. Three lots of guards couldn't tell me. And I rang the parish office and the police secretary. She knew nothing about it. The county council was, because they're kind of over the graveyards, the county council didn't know anything about it, and they said they shouldn't be closed.
Now, okay, I know Glasnevin, because we looked up their website.
That's different. I read that. That's totally different. It's
In one sense, it's not different. That it's a massive graveyard.
Yeah.
You could walk for miles in there without meeting a sinner, so to speak. That's the underground. But you can walk for miles around there without meeting anybody. It's fantastic. Also has access to the Botanic Gardens. But anyway, all their gates are locked, apart from, obviously, funerals coming in. 51551, wash your hands. But Geraldine Donoghue, Geraldine, good afternoon. You're the same topic, Geraldine. What's your situation? How are you?
Well, Joe, I lost my son, my 4-year-old son, in 2015 in a tragic accident.
Okay.
And, I go down to the graveyard most days, every evening at 7 o'clock with my husband. And that's where we sit to talk to our son. And we haven't been able to do it in 5 weeks, and they haven't opened it any. There's no way into that graveyard. The gates are completely locked. There used to be a side gate opened in the evening time for the likes of people to be working. But they have locked everything up, and I have seen old people jump over the wall, and it's nearly 6 foot high.
Well, that's not a good idea.
No, yeah.
And it's Rahun Cemetery in Galway.
Rahun Cemetery in Galway. And I can't really understand why they decided to close it, because every single cemetery in Mayo is opened and every other cemetery in Galway is opened. I did ring the council and they said it's about touching graves. I said, who goes touching other people's graves?
Mm.
Do you know what I mean? Like, our son is on the further end of the grave, because it's in 2015, and there is it's a huge cemetery too. So you can well socially distance. And I work on the front line. I'm an insulin-dependent diabetic, and I still chose to work and put my own life, and I go into hospital to do my work, and I can socially distance. I wash my hands. I do all that after every patient and wear my mask. And I can't understand how, and I can go down shopping, but yet I can't go into the grave. They could have some disinfectant at the grave and somebody manning it, somebody there. I think they're opening them on the 5th of May, they say, but they could bring that further along.
Well, that's speculation at this stage.
Yeah, it's only speculation. But like, when they do open it, there's going to be a queue like there was for Supermax. You know, drive through. So, I mean, like, where that then people won't socially distance, because there'll be a huge influx of people in to the graveyard when it does open.
And
so
you
it doesn't make any sense.
You go up every evening, Geraldine. That was
routine. Yeah, that was our routine. Yeah, and some days, like, I go down, because that's my baby. It's my baby that's in there. That's, everyone else gets to hold their child at home and socially distance with their kids. This is my, I live in the Clybourne Road. It's a Rahun Cemetery, so it's within walking distance.
Okay.
Yeah, so I'm within walking distance.
And is there any facility for you even to stand outside in eyeline
your baby's grave? My son's grave is the other side of the cemetery.
Okay.
It's right back down at the back. I do see a woman there most evenings. She's a 21-year-old son. She's so disabled, she can't jump the wall. She's crying over them, and she told me, I would dig up his bones and bring them home to my own backyard, she said, if I knew this was going to happen, she said. And she's crying there. And I know of another very elderly man that's jumping that wall. It's not fair.
Madness, don't
it's really not fair. Like, they're putting, I work in a hospital, I was in orthopedics at the weekend. Like, they're putting these people's physical, mental and emotional, they're not looking after, they're not here to do. The government said that they have this policy on mental health. But I can tell you, closing cemeteries in Galway are really affecting mental health. And I was talking to a young lad yesterday in the hospital, a healthcare assistant, and he told me that his father died a month ago and that they spent hundreds of euros on flowers and he can't get into the grave to even look at the flowers. He said he was thinking of sending the bill to Galway County Council, and his mother is grieving heavily. And I know of another woman that lost two of her sons, and
is
it's
not
fair.
Is there any other way around this? I know there is, your point is there's inconsistency. Some graveyards are open, some are closed.
Yeah, and also they could socially distance. It's the easiest place in the world if they put somebody on a gate to socially distance. That is not even an argument. It's the easiest place in the world.
And when you go, hardly
anybody. There's an elderly man there that goes every day to visit his wife, an elderly woman that goes every single day. They don't have any, he doesn't have any kids. Mm. And they're there to visit their loved ones. That's all they have. He's socially distanced at home, completely on his own, with the only person in his life in a graveyard. Mm. Do you know? So it's
I'm trying to think, is there... I know what graves mean, obviously, to people, and the remains of your baby, as you say, is there.
Yeah, he's my baby. But, I know, from other people losing kids when they can't find their kids, I always say, at least we have a grave to go to. But these 5 weeks, we haven't had no grave to go to. So,
is there any other location there? I mean, in the house, obviously, is there a shrine?
I have a memorial garden,
I put up
a memorial garden, to him. And I plant flowers in it, and I do sit there. But the grave is hugely important.
I was going to say, do you go out there and think about them? I suspect listening to you, you don't.
Of the day.
Exactly, you don't stop thinking.
There's no, it doesn't go out of your head.
What was your baby's name?
Declan.
Declan, okay. Junior. And there was a tragic accident, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Yeah. Have you spoken to
or would it help to speak to a cleric? I don't know, are you Protestant or Catholic?
Oh,
or
no, I've had a brilliant... I've gone to counselling with First Light, and okay. They look after me. I have a brilliant counsellor, and I'm involved in Embrace Farm, another charity. I raised 19,000 for them there 2 years ago.
What is that?
Embrace Farm, for anyone that has kids involved in a farming accident. And
okay.
Yeah, so they, like I have people to talk to. But
yeah,
like this,
yeah.
The grave, it's a different thing. Like people don't think of this because they don't have to think of it. But if you've recently been bereaved, or if you have a child in the grave, or a spouse, that's when it hits home. You know, that's when it hurts. You know, and it does hurt.
Yeah.
I'd like to be able to go down and walk the flowers. I'd like to be able to plant new flowers. Everything is probably dead on the grave. Do you know, we look after our grave very well. Like, and we need to see it. Like, we need to, yeah. So we need to tint the flowers on it, and yeah. So I do feel for anyone out there, and that's why I rang you. I feel for anyone out there that has, especially the recently bereaved, like any anniversary, they're really, really, really hard. So anyone that's going through an anniversary and they can't see their loved one, an anniversary, I go numb. Coming up to the month of July, the whole month, like it's really hard. So I can't understand.
This wouldn't dilute your grief, but have you other children?
I have. Well, I went on to have other.
Declan was your firstborn, I should say.
No, Juliana was.
Oh, Juliana. Okay.
So Juliana was.
Oh, he was your baby at the time. He was.
He was my baby at the time. I suppose I had lost my job. You know, a lot of parents might say that, but like I'd lost my meaning in life when I lost Declan. Declan was my whole world, and he was the best little boy in the world. He was so full of joy and happiness. I'm an insulin dependent diabetic, and I said, no, I'm not going to have any more kids because it's too dangerous. So in 2010, I had finished with my family for health reasons. And then when Declan died, I didn't want to live. I was so broken. I was a complete broken human being. So I spent a lot of days just crying, lying in bed, you know. And I discussed then with my husband about having more kids. I said, it's the only thing I can't think of anything else that could even, you know, bring me anywhere closer to being a human being again, feeling like a normal person. Because that was my job. My job was being a mom. So having other kids was the only thing. I'd lost my main job in life. So, we did. We went on. We tried very hard, and we found it very difficult to have Noah. I was down in a fertility clinic, and I got all the tests done, and then I went in for a HSG, and they found out my tubes were blocked. So they flushed them out, and I got pregnant again, but that baby didn't. I had a miscarriage, and that was my lowest point of life.
Yeah.
And I just done a bit of research then and realised that if I went again straight away, there was a better chance of having another baby.
Okay.
So I was determined, and the hope was always there. I had a great hope that I'd have more children. So I went again, and I got pregnant the following month with Noah. And Noah's now three.
Ah.
So when Noah was 1 year old, I was telling the girl earlier on, when Noah was 1 year old, he fell down the stairs of a house we were visiting.
Oh, God.
And another bereaved couple, we got to know them through bereavement, and he was rushed into hospital, and we thought he was gone. So the guards pulled us over. I was praying for something to happen. I was so delighted. I have great respect for the guards. I think they're absolutely, I couldn't praise them high enough. They've done so much for me in the last few years. So they pulled us over and they give us a guard escort into the hospital where the resus team was waiting, and UCHG, brilliant team. It came out, but he started crying. So I was so delighted, never so delighted to hear a child cry.
Yeah.
But he was fine, but I wasn't. I couldn't go to work. I couldn't leave the house. So I was broken completely because I thought I was going to lose another son.
Yeah.
And so I decided to take a bit of time off, and I then decided to go and start getting counselling, because in the hospital they put me in contact with a girl, and she gave me the numbers for First Light and Embrace Farm.
Okay.
So then I contacted them, and First Light were brilliant. They, Mags McGoldrick came down, and well, I had been actually involved in Embrace Farm from earlier on the bereavement. They bring us away every year, and Mags McGoldrick came down, and she. My important thing was getting counselling for Juliana. So my husband had lost his job the year before, too. Declan went to heaven, so there was no income coming into the house because I wasn't working. Mm-hmm. So then we couldn't afford counselling, and it had never been offered to us by anybody. So
you mentioned earlier you have got counsellors now, don't you?
Yes, I have brilliant First Light, and they came on board super, then, and they gave Juliana play therapy, me counselling. Mm-hmm. They were absolutely brilliant, and I still am in contact with my counsellor. Okay. She's very, very good.
And how? I don't think people need any explanation. But when you sit at a grave every evening and you leave when you have to walk back home.
Yeah. Well, I feel like I've talked to him. Yeah. I've had a conversation with my son.
Okay.
Like, I asked my son for my two little boys. Everything I've ever asked from, he's given me.
Okay.
You know, I asked, like, I have a little boy too, Louis. When I went out after Noah had the fall downstairs, I got pregnant with Louis. Mm. And I took a year off then, so it was 2 years nearly off work. But I'm just back since January, and I love it. I love, like, a lot of people say to me, why don't you go on this COVID payment and go out to work, because you're like, you're one of the serious categories, you know, being an insulin dependent diabetic. Yeah. But I love my work. I don't want to leave work.
Great.
And like, I go in there every day to mind other, you know, other people's relatives and take care of them, because it gives me fulfillment. It gives me more of a purpose. And, you know, I'm happy doing that. But what I'm saying is, I go in there every day, apparently, like, to risk my life to mind COVID patients, but yet I can't visit my son. You know?
Well, that's your plea. That's your plea to try. Stay with us for a sec, Geraldine. Christine Monaghan. Christine, good afternoon.
Hi, Joe. How are you?
Good. You go to Dardistown Cemetery in North Dublin.
Yeah, my dad is buried in Dardistown. Mm. And we hadn't been to the grave in a while. So myself and my husband just decided to put a few cleaning bits into the haversack and do our 2K walk up and just see, could we get in? So I was really surprised the gates were open. There was loads of people there. There were cars parked all around. And we were able to get in, no problem, no questions asked. Done our bits, cleaned up, gave him a kiss, said a few prayers, and off we came home. So there was no problem at all. Now, I hope when I'm saying this now that it's not going to mean they're going to lock the gates now, because they're aware that they're open. But, yeah.
Well, was the car park full? Would that not be...
I'd say it was about maybe 10 cars. But there was a good few people walking around, people looking at graves. I actually said to my husband, I think people are just in here having a ramble around because it's somewhere to walk.
They were fascinating places.
Because my father isn't buried too far from Gerry Ryan, so we always notice, like, a lot of people come up, and Orla Gernon as well.
Veronica Gernon.
So they come up and they kind of have a little look at his grave and that, you know. Yeah. So, but yeah, it was open for business.
Okay.
Now, the flower shop wasn't open, obviously. But you could walk in and around it. So, yeah.
Okay.
I was delighted to get up and clean it.
Okay.
It was in a bad way. I haven't not been up there for a while, so...
Okay, and who runs Dardistown? Is that run by Glasnevin
Trust? It's run by Glasnevin, yeah.
Glasnevin is closed, the main cemetery.
Yeah.
1 million people buried there.
Yeah, so that's why when we were walking up, we were kind of saying, well, we're doing our 2K walk anyway, so we just brought the equipment with us and just said, right, we'll take a chance.
Okay.
And so we were really surprised when we turned in and said, oh, the gates are open, that's great.
People do. There is an air when you go into a graveyard of great respect.
We were delighted to do it. So, okay.
It's Joe at RT.ie and 51551. Wash your hands. You know, Teresa McLaughlin in Edenderry. Teresa, you're listening to Geraldine and Kay, and you feel great empathy.
Yeah. Oh, my Lord, yeah. Yeah, because, like, going to a graveyard, you'd normally go in and out if you have someone buried there, and you wouldn't think... You wouldn't have to think going. And then when this all happened, they say you can't go out. I live out the country.
Right.
And my son is buried in the graveyard 14 years. So I've gone in every day, most days, for 14 years. And then when this comes up and you're thinking, God, if they stop me, what will I'm going shopping, you know.
Yeah.
And that's why it's... But when they say it's not essential, now I've never been stopped.
Okay.
But you're always worried.
Hmm.
And but when they say it's not essential, I don't agree. Maybe it's just me, but I think it's fierce essential to some people. Other people...
You go every day for 14 years.
Yeah, most. Very rare I miss a day, unless I was sick now.
Would you go up at the same time, Teresa?
No. I might go in the morning, then I might go in the afternoon. It just depends.
Yeah,
but it just gives you a bit of comfort.
Yeah.
And it's just, you see other people that have buried people lately and they'd wave over at you. And these times now, you wouldn't go near, you'd just wave at people and that. And everyone's very respectful. And it gives people a bit of comfort. I've seen that people who are buried recently, you know, and it just gives people a bit of comfort. And because you can't have funerals, my sister was buried 4 weeks ago, and you can't have funerals. And it's just everyone's
But isn't the problem, Teresa and Geraldine and Kay, like the medics, the experts are really strong on people not congregating.
Oh, yeah, but you wouldn't be congregating now in a graveyard. I know when the funerals, when they're small, they're grand because you're 6 foot or 8 foot apart and that's grand. But it's everyone's trying to deal with, I suppose, how upset they are and have no one to talk to afterwards because you go home after a funeral, you know. And the kind of, so when they're going into the graveyard, they feel a bit of comfort in that. They like just to go in. If they've never seen anyone to go into the graveyard, they feel like to go home that they've been there, you know, and it just gives them a little comfort, you know. It kind of makes them feel that, I don't know, it's they're visiting their son or daughter or sister, brother, mother, father, to feel comfort.
But you see, I think there was another issue which arose recently. One of the reasons why places that on the front, so to speak, don't look as if they should be closed. One of the reasons they're closed is that the Gardaí and the health don't want people travelling to them, because when you travel, you're in a car invariably, and you could be in an accident, you could end up in a... They want to dampen down everything.
Oh, yeah.
But anyway,
yeah.
Father Paddy Bourne is the PP and Abbey Leakes has contacted us. Paddy, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe, and good afternoon to all your listeners.
And what's the story in Abbey Leakes, Paddy? Are the graveyards open or...?
Well, again, I suppose it's a different reality in that, unlike maybe the big urban areas, big cities, our graveyards are very small. And yet I live beside one, Joe. My back window looks onto a graveyard. And what do I look onto? I look onto people early in the morning, as they've been doing for years, sitting beside an elderly parent. I get phone calls from parishioners who obviously are cocooned or not, because of the 2 kilometre measure, haven't been to a graveyard for 6 weeks, and their hearts literally are very, very fragile. And I suppose at a human level, because the graveyard essentially is my neighbour, I try to reassure and say prayers. But a word of hope, Joe, in terms of, I know you've spoken and your many, many listeners have spoken about solidarity to over 1,000 people who have died because of COVID, and many, many more not because of COVID, but whose funerals are seriously restricted at this time. And whilst the restrictions are very difficult, communities are fantastic. That sense of people going to their gates when a requiem is a coffin is passing by. You know, the Irish have a particular sense of solidarity and I suppose deep respect for our loved ones gone before us. And
the argument would be that it's deep respect for the living that's clamping down on all these locations. I don't think the fact that some graveyards are open and some aren't shows there isn't a continuity across the board, to speak.
We're talking
about the living. I know that's a very hard thing for people to hear.
Yeah, and
they don't want
to
guard the Gardaí and the powers that be. The experts that be have decided that it's only essential journeys. They've listed the essential journeys, and visits to graveyards, unfortunately, are not in that category of essential journey. So that's the end of that, is it not?
I agree with you wholeheartedly.
Well, you don't, because you're calling for the graveyards to stay open and people be allowed.
I don't mean to cut across you like that. Yeah, no, you're okay, yeah. Joe. But what I'm trying to say, Joe, is that there's a lot of people whose vulnerabilities are greatly exaggerated because they cannot get to the graveyards. Of course, I respect fully what the government and those in leadership, who are, by the way, I think, doing a terrific job in difficult circumstances. But when we look to the future, and please God, the not too distant future, when restrictions are to be removed, that certainly I think one of those places that is so sacred to people are the places where loved ones who have gone before them are buried, you know. But it's not easy.
It's not listed as an essential journey.
No, and I accept that fully.
And how do you hear that, Geraldine? Is that hard for you to hear?
That's hard, yeah. Very hard, because it's an essential journey for me, and I am within my 2 kilometre distance away from my son. Okay. And even if they left the little gate opened and let people go in, there's only about five or six people in there in the evening time, and a huge, huge plot. Like, what are you going to do? Keep running over to the people that are walking in? Do you know what I mean? Nobody's going to touch anybody. And nobody touches another person's headstone.
Yeah, I understand.
Not that I know of.
Yeah. Deirdre Butler's on the line. Deirdre.
Hello, Joe. How are you?
Good, thanks. Your point, please. Deirdre, thanks.
Well, my point is, Joe, I know the guards have to do their job, but I think, like, I mean, it's not right that people can't go to visit their loved ones. They're going to have to ease up on that restriction, because it's not going too far, but people, like, God forgive, you know, you'd like to go down to visit your loved ones in the graveyard. I know we can't go to mass, we can't do this, or we can't do that. I know all that. But, I mean, people, it's unbelievable that you couldn't even visit the graveyard, you know. And, I mean, that should be essential service, you know. You want to go to the graveyard if somebody dies, you know what I mean?
Well, the experts have said it's not an essential journey.
Well, I don't know who's making all these decisions.
We know they're household names at this stage. The National Public Health Emergency Team, there's 33 people on it. You could nearly name, well, you couldn't name them all anyway, but you can name Tony Holohan, can't you? You can name Paul Reid at this stage. And they seem to be the ones that are making the decisions. And they're experts. They're not politicians trying to get a vote.
I know all that, Joe, but you should be able to, like, when you go into the graveyard, you can. You're able to keep your distance. You're not going to be, away. You know what I mean? You just talk to people from away. But I mean, they're just going to have to ease up on it, because I mean, it's frustrating for people. You know that this is going on. We don't know how long more this is going to go on for.
Okay,
it's gone on and on and on. Like, you can't even, you know, I'm not saying, like, the even mobile phone shops are all closed. That's essential service, and that's closed down.
And can you get phones online?
I don't have online.
But there is online people that can.
You know what I mean? Like, Trice and all them are all open, you know, but the mobile phone shops should be open and keep their distance. I mean, we're going to have Christmas now coming up. Is all the shops going to be closed? I'm hoping maybe they might ease up something on the 5th of May.
It's a great unknown. Father Paddy, what do you say to anxious people like Geraldine? Let's be blunt. What do you say to people like Geraldine to try and give her some salve, some consolation, some meaning? She said she lost her meaning in life when Declan was killed. Now, she's obviously, thankfully, and she's had counselling and various three other children since, I think. But still, you can hear the ache in Geraldine's voice for her lost boy who was buried in the graveyard, and now she can't visit the graveyard. Are there any words of consolation?
Well, I think the most important thing is sometimes words are deeply inadequate, and I think actions always speak louder than words. And I'm sure for you, Geraldine, and for anyone listening who's lost loved ones, you have been touched by kindness. You have been touched by the memory of your lovely son, or those who are listening, of a parent. And I suppose as a Christian, and we're in the third week of Easter, and I think it's a really important line that I'm celebrating many Requiem Masses at this time. And I love that line, for them, life has changed, not ended. Our lives have changed because we both physically and emotionally miss them in a huge manner. But in faith, their lives live in a place of light and peace. And I think, you know, this is, Joe, an extraordinary cathartic moment, not just for our little island, but for humanity as that question of meaning and purpose in life. And in my humble experience over the past 6 weeks, I find people engaging at that conversation in a very real way. I am amazed, Joe, at the amount of people who are connecting either on Facebook Live to masses, entering into the whole umbrella of communication. But just outside of even the Catholic sacramental thing, there is... I just want to say, I experience a softening of humanity, a deep gentleness, a sense, despite everybody's exaggerated fears and worries and confines and cocoons, I've never been on the phone as much. I've never experienced such support on the ground. I've witnessed fantastic moments of inspiration. And like even Geraldine, listening that you, in your own vulnerability of health, are making that fundamental sacrifice for the Irish people to get out there and care. And that's the resurrection. That's the resurrection of the spirit of hope that your good son defines and now personifies in how you respond to the needs of others.
Well, he's given me great hope. And like that graveyard is the place I've asked for everything.
Sure.
And I ask and I pray for all the COVID patients down there when I do go down, anyone that's in hospital. And I work on the front line and I go into work, I'm happy going into work, I love my work, and I do work in an environment where my life is always put at risk, but I know that my son protects me, and I go to the grave to talk to him, to help protect me so that I can help others. So that's my place. So I can't understand these people that made these rules to close the graveyard. Do they have any bereavement? Have they ever lost a child? Joe was saying about so many people and we all know them by name, but how much do we know about their past? How much do we know about who they have lost? Obviously, they have no idea of grief. None. Because grief is a long-term mental health issue and it goes on for the rest of your life when you lose a child. You never, ever stop grieving. And if somebody takes any part of that child away from you, you're in pain. And I think it's terrible. And it's not just your child, but your spouse too. I know of other people that grieve, but a child is part of you. You give birth to them. You carry them for 9 months. I had him for 4 years. I knew him. I knew his little personality. I knew everything about him. I knew what he was like. I knew what type of person he was starting to evolve into as he was growing up. I could have conversations with him. He was my purpose in life, and it was taken from me. And now he's taken from me again. And I have two boys, and as I said, I asked God for them two boys. I prayed. My son's name is Noah Pio Francesco after St. Pedro Pio, and my other son is called Louis Martin after St. Louis Martin. So I be a very religious person, and I listen to my mass, my local mass online, my local priests every Sunday and during the week if I can, you know, put on the Catholic online.
Say with us, Geraldine. Just
Seamus,
I know you've been hanging there for a while, Seamus. You just want to make a general point. Go ahead, Seamus. 51551, wash your hands. I'll keep talking to other people. Go ahead, Seamus.
How are you? I rang in earlier just to nullify or ask anybody if they know where are all the cars coming from into town. Like 2 weeks ago, for me driving in here into Christchurch, it was like
Dublin city centre.
I drive in from League Club and there was nothing on the roads. Now I have to come in. I'm a chef here in a homeless hospital, so I have to get to work to feed the lads. But day by day, Joe, the cars are just... it's unbelievable how many more cars there is on the roads. Every daily, like.
And when you say...
Daily.
Like,
I'm up here at Christchurch. And usually, as you know, Patrick's Cathedral and that, they're all here. And, you know, usually at this time of year, it's chock-a-block with people. But there's no cars or anything in here on the streets. So I'd love to know, where are all these cars going in the last two and a half weeks? Like, they haven't took on I don't know how many tens of thousands of extra people that are working in hospitals and care homes. So where are people going? I see vans, painting vans, plumbers, landscape, gardening vans, everything.
How are you? Your point, James, is you go in at the same time every day and come home at the same time.
Yeah,
in the last
but it's,
good
it's,
few
it's
weeks.
Grown, Joe, it's grown, Joe, by the day.
And
like I was stopped once when the one big crackdown was the last bank holiday weekend.
Yeah, another one coming,
I was stopped once coming into work on the Saturday evening or Saturday morning. Right. Now the lads were lovely. Where are you going? I they didn't even ask me for my letter to just the show. They said, where are you going? I said, I'm a chef in town in the Back Lane hostel.
And what's said, well, how is your hostel managing, Seamus? How many residents?
Great. Now, we have 63 residents.
Oh, well done. Wow.
And yeah,
and
no,
how are they passing their day?
Very hard, very hard. Yeah. Now, you know, 90% of them would be great staying into their rooms, but just some people, you know yourself, you can't change a leper spot overnight. But I mean, look, they're being so good. I mean,
well done, you know,
if they have to go to the shop or something, they're running down, they're running back,
they're running back up to
their rooms. But it's just more so about the traffic. I would love to know, or if anyone can tell me, if the police can tell me, or where are all these cars going?
Because
it's unbelievable. Okay. Even the M50, I look onto the M50 going over there at King's Hospital, and it's getting to like old age. Now, not as bad, but there is a hell of a lot of traffic on it. And I'd love to just know, where is everyone going? Because they're not going to work. No way.
Okay. Point made, Seamus. Keep up your service, Seamus. Well done. And all the residents you look after, fair play to them as well.
Yeah, they're all great.
They seem to be very good. Margaret, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
You're listening to this very difficult conversation.
Yes, especially the lady that her child is buried in Rahul.
Geraldine, yeah.
Yeah. I had a lovely son in 1981, and I went on to have a daughter in 1982.
Mm-hmm.
And she was a cot death.
Oh,
and very quickly, thank God, I had another son.
Mm-hmm.
And but my husband did not deal at all with the cot death and wouldn't put up a grave even. So I had no grave to go to. He was a talented graphic designer, and he said he would, in his own time, put up a grave and design it. And I was one of these people that felt I should get on with the living.
Okay.
I had two beautiful children, and I concentrated on them and spent 3 years, you know, trying to shield them from what had happened in the marriage.
Okay.
And really didn't grieve, I'd say, at the time. When my husband did, it was 1982, and there was very little counselling and all of that.
Okay.
But anyway, I went on after 10 years to have a nervous breakdown, and my husband had to step in and take over and mind my boys. I spent 10 years in mental health services, and I did recover.
Oh, great.
And I then went on to have cancer, and I was separated from my children for about 22 years.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I got back to Galway with the help of a local counsellor and great friends in Galway. And I have a very happy life now and everything.
Glad to hear that.
I'm not ringing up to moan.
No,
but I would like to say to that lady who goes to the grave every day, there are some positive things in her life. First of all, her husband is able to go with her.
Mm-hmm.
Secondly, she has other children. And I would strongly suggest to her, even though I probably shouldn't, to put all her energy into the living children. Because if she doesn't, they will resent her dead son that she seems to spend a lot of time with and mourning. And they are living. And I think they need her more.
But I think, in fairness, listening to Geraldine is
I want to try and be very fair.
I know you are being fair. You are being fair. And your own husband, Margaret, is he still with us?
He died at a very young age, 51.
Okay. Well, I'm sorry to
a lot that. Of people, we did divorce, but we were great friends.
Oh, I'm glad to hear that.
He was a marvellous father who took over he always had Christmas with me and my children. Okay. He couldn't have done more for them.
Okay,
they are two wonderful sons,
okay,
and I'm glad I put my energy into them. I'm back in Galway now with them,
right,
and life does turn around for everybody.
On that note, because it is a stressful time for everyone, Margaret, thanks indeed. Geraldine, thank you so much for sharing And May Declan, I know he's never out of your heart or your mind, but he's also never out of your arms, I suspect. May he...
But Declan inspires me to go on to do great things, and that's that's why he's formed the person I am now.
Okay, and he will never leave your loving embrace, Geraldine. I know that.
No, never.
Are you his? Okay. Yeah,
thank you.
Thanks indeed, Margaret, Geraldine, Deirdre, and all other calls. 51551, wash your hands. Joe
Duffy! Talk to Joe on 1850-715-815.
And Joe at rte.ie. Teresa, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
We heard Seamus earlier on saying he goes into Dublin City Centre, essential worker, he's a chef in a homeless hostel with 70 residents. And he goes in at the same time every day, and he said he's seen, he believes, a noticeable increase in the last 7 weeks, up to and including today, in the number of cars on the road, even though the restrictions have not been lifted. Where were your observations made, Teresa?
It was actually on Friday, and I live in Talla, and I was driving down the Kiltipper Way, which is kind of close to where the stadium is. You know, there were just, when I say crowds, there were crowds of teenagers. It was a beautiful day, hanging around, plastic bags. I would guess what was in the bags, but I don't want to tarnish people without being sure. But, I mean, there was no social distancing at all. And I was just infuriated. And then when I was listening to the show on Friday, and you were talking about the social distancing. And I suppose the point I wanted to make was, you know, these teenagers clearly have parents. And I would just wonder, do their parents not wonder what they're doing when they're not at home? You know, I mean, I spoke to the researcher earlier. I have a teenage granddaughter who lives with me, and she hasn't she's been outside in the garden and that. She hasn't seen any of her friends since the 13th of March. Now, they Zoom each other, they can talk to each other on phone, and that's fantastic. But because she lives with us, you know, and we're probably in the age bracket that we would be, you know, we're not quite over the 70 mark, but nevertheless, with certain conditions that we have to protect ourselves. And I'm just infuriated because I wonder, these parents have to know that if their children are not in, where are they?
Okay, and I'm kind of like, I don't know whether you've seen, it was in most of the newspapers today, a remarkable mural by this incredible artist, Emmeline Blake, is from Talla. And it's a full wall, and it's the police, not the Gardaí, the police, Sting and the lads. And it's all the stories based around "Don't stand so close to me, don't stand so close to me." And I think Madonna then features in another one. But so you have on the one hand this incredible campaign, which I think is even getting that image, those images, Emmeline's images are going worldwide at this stage. They're so brilliant. But so you have this remarkable campaign in Talla, and you're saying the breaches that you saw were in Talla and with young people.
I wrote the email on Friday. I was really infuriated. But I've also seen, and I don't want to say where I live because obviously I'm a little bit nervous, but I've seen there is one or two particular, you know, lads, young, it's more so lads now that I've seen in my area, and their pals calling up, and they're all huddled around the hall door or else they're going out together. So I suppose my plea would be to the parents of these kids, you know, maybe show them some graphic images of what's going on, because my daughter is a nurse, and now she doesn't live here in Ireland. She's nursing abroad. But she has told me firsthand of what it's like.
I know. Well, we've had...
She's a critical care nurse.
Yeah, we've had...
What it's like.
Well, we've had people on this programme, as you probably know, telling their story of what it's like to get this awful, awful pestilence. Yeah. It's unbelievable.
I mean, I'm not teenage bashing, don't get me wrong.
I know, but I understand.
I understand teenagers are frustrated. I understand that it's very difficult. It's very difficult for everybody. But I would really, you know, say to parents, know where your children are.
Okay. And how are you managing, Teresa?
Well, yeah, I'm doing good. We're doing fine. We're very lucky. We've had our shopping delivered for the most part. And, yeah, I'm even a nice garden. We're lucky we're able to sit out in the garden and enjoy that.
Okay.
And you just want to survive and get on with it and hope for a better day.
Yeah. Every day you wake up without any symptoms is a better day. I know that's hard for people to hear in the current atmosphere, but
yeah,
that's it when you.
Well, I'm thankful to be alive. Let's put it that way.
Reminding ourselves that the vast majority of people survive COVID-19 when they get it. Okay, and obviously cognizant of those over 1,070 people in the Republic that have died. Okay, Teresa, go safely. Joe,
all right, take care.
Thanks again.
Bye-bye.
Joe at RTE.ie.
Joe Duffy.
Talk to Joe on 1850-715-815.
I'm Joe at RT.ie and talk to Joe. Joe, good afternoon.
Hi, Joe. Lovely to talk to you.
Likewise. What happened? It was Saturday afternoon.
Saturday in my local supermarket, Saturday afternoon, I went in and I do wear a mask. I have something underlining, but I'm okay, thank God. So I might be slightly a bit paranoid, but I know it's quite serious. So just for my own protection and somebody else's protection, I wear a mask and the gloves that are provided in the supermarket, I put them on if I'm using a trolley. And I happened to go down an aisle and noticed that there was a lot of people down. It was about 5 people in the aisle. And I kind of thought, no, I'll turn around and I'll go into the next one or whatever. Just I'll turn around. Yeah. And when I did this, there was 2 particular women, and I will say they're women, and they weren't young teenagers, and they happened to look at me and laugh. They weren't wearing anything, so I thought, yeah, they probably think I'm paranoid. Look at this one with her, you know, her mask and everything. Mm-hmm. But I just turned and I went to the other aisle, and there was no one on the aisle, and they happened to come around, and one of them coughed and laughed in my face. Like, came right up to me and coughed and laughed, and and I kind of turned and I just actually went like this, are you for real? And she went, I'm covering my mouth while I'm coughing, but roaring laughing. And she was shoulder to me, and I never thought to go to, you know, the manager or anything. I did ring the manager about 20 minutes later, and he said he'd look at the CCTV footage and if I wanted to go any further. And then I phoned the local guard at the station.
Okay.
And I thought maybe they'd look at it and maybe speak to her to tell her that she shouldn't have done what she did. But they said, no, it's a criminal act and they would have to bring her to court. But then I'm thinking, if I do that, have I got more trouble on my front door?
Why'd you be worried? What? You're worried about somebody, as they say, calling round?
Because it's in my area. It's in my local area. I don't know if she would do something like that.
Was this just one individual or was she acting in cahoots with somebody? You know the way...
She was with another woman. But, I mean, they look like they're mammies. This is the bit I'm just like, I don't know them. And I've lived in this area like 13, 14 years. It's my local supermarket. I know they laughed and I kind of thought, okay, well, maybe I look a bit OTT. I've only got a little mask on.
Yeah.
There's loads of people wearing them. And I thought, I knew they laughed and I just kind of turned. But I just wasn't expecting them to come around the other aisle and I certainly wasn't expecting her to do what she did.
Yeah.
Now, the guard this morning just said to me, we couldn't just go and talk to her and tell her that you're not going to go any further and what she did. And he said, no, it's serious. He said, we'd have to get a statement from you.
Yeah. So now you're in a dilemma. Are you? Won't you?
Why do we just let it go? Because we're afraid of something else.
Yeah.
Now I know it's a criminal offence to the point where they would prison someone. I don't want, like, if she's a mother to be sent to prison for what she did.
Yeah.
I would just prefer that somebody would speak to her and tell her, like, how would a grown woman do that? And why would she think it's so funny? I've got my own father in a nursing home I haven't seen since the 15th of March. I'm trying to keep myself safe, like, for that. And, you know, I haven't seen my own siblings and my nieces and nephews. So why would this woman think it was okay to do what she did? And why would she do it at all?
Okay. Sorry you had to go through that, Joe. Stay safe and thanks for that contribution.
Yeah.
That's Joe. Let me help out with the Gardaí. You've announced that from 7 a.m. tomorrow morning, Tuesday, until next Monday night, the bank holiday Monday, over... At any one time, At any one time, over 2,500 officers, you know they're all on 12-hour shifts now, over 2,500 Gardaí will be involved in checkpoints or high-visibility patrols, so nobody be going further than 2K unless it's essential. George, your point, please, about the earlier conversation about graveyard. Your point, please.
Yeah, how are you, Joe? Yeah, no, just first of all, that woman who lost her child, it's obviously very sad, but I think this day and age, where we are, I think people just stay safe. There obviously will be a time, again, like where we can go out and do what we're doing, but just for the moment, you know.
And
please God, like, say our prayers every night, so you know, she'd be able to hear them.
Lovely woman. Okay. You know, okay. Thanks indeed. That's George. Rebecca Meehan produced. And Ray Darcy is next. That's my fault. 51551, wash your hands, Ray.